Hello, everybody. We're back. We are with Phil Escott today. Phil, I first saw you after searching for carnivore videos on YouTube about 6 to 9 months ago, I think, and that led me down a rabbit hole. After being vegan, vegetarian, fruitarian, even trying breatharian at one point, losing about 12 pounds in about 4 days. But yeah, so that's how I first found you, Phil. Can you tell the audience and myself a little bit more about you, your background, your history?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me on, Alex. It's been nice checking out bits of your stuff these last couple of days and what you've been up to. And it sounds like in some ways we've had a similar journey. Well, I mean, mine started, I'm an old geezer now. I was born in 62. And I sort of grew up in the 70s and got really into all the hippie side of things and traveled with the peace convoy and took a load of hallucinogenics and ended up a bit of a sort of acid casualty, I think. And then spent the next 30 years trying to get myself out of that hole with a whole load of sort of spiritual practices that didn't involve so many chemicals, like meditation and yoga and all that kind of thing. And was well into all sorts of health and fitness and trying to understand all about that, and wrote my first book on, well, it was on exercise and Ayurvedic medicine and whatever about 1996. And I had a chapter on diet, and I was going on all about, you know, how great vegetarianism was because I'd been sucked down that rabbit hole by the TM movement, the Transcendental Meditation people, you know, that's pretty much based on Hinduism. And I was kind of at the end of the 90s, I was kind of quite big and writing for bodybuilding mags and running my own gym. And then things started to really niggle and go wrong. And I noticed I was very inflamed, couldn't take any the heat at all. I went for a long trip to India in 1999, 2000, and things started to feel a bit weird there. Very intolerant to the heat, could only take about 2 minutes of sun. You know, it was a bit of a battle getting around India. And then over the next 10 years, things, you know, I started to eat rubbish, really. It was largely vegetarian, but it was sort of pretty much based on wheat and dairy. And the things started to niggle and I started to become a bit of a fat bastard. And then by 2010, I had psoriatic arthritis. I mean, I could see it creeping up for 20 years probably, but in 2010, I was really crippled, really, really badly crippled. Came back sort of October time from a trip to Thailand to a friend's fishery in Krabi, where they have these monstrous great fish. I mean, a sort of 600-pound arapaima in this lake and stuff like that. And then you're just battling them, and the joints were bad, the back was bad. And it was, and then when I got back, just both ankles blew up, knee blew up. And I had to find my way out of it, really. And so the first thing was, let's go even more vegan, and let's go raw vegan, and let's go fruitarian. You've had the same progression, I think. And so I did that and ended up, instead of being about 210 pounds and really inflamed, I ended up at 120 pounds and really inflamed, which is pretty skinny at 5'10". It's like, you know, 9 stone. And so then I sort of discovered the whole world of keto, and eventually by 2015, carnivore, and wrote another book. I figured it out pretty much before I went carnivore, maybe 2013, 2014. I'd reversed pretty much everything. And that was not just the arthritis, but God, where do I start? Fatty liver, cysts on the liver, kidney stones, rosacea, all sorts of digestive and skin issues, you know, just lots of rampaging autoimmunity and cardiovascular issues. And that just all kind of settled down after a load of wrong turns, a load of experimentation. And I wrote a book called Arthritis, The Best Thing That Ever Happened to Me, back in, I think, 2013, 2014. And then discovered this whole carnivore thing. And so I haven't eaten, a little while ago, somebody was attacking me. You know, I get a lot of death threats from vegans and whatever on YouTube.
Oh, congratulations, yeah.
Yeah, they love that sort of thing. And one of them was having a go at me. In fact, he wasn't even a vegan, this one. He was just somebody in the sort of standard dietary dogma, the sort of five a day food pyramid thing. And he was so outraged. He decided to call me out as a complete fraud because I'd had a handful of berries when I was fishing a couple of years ago, you know, and I'd found some blackberries growing and I'd had them. And so he's going, "You are not a full carnivore. You're lying and you're deceiving your followers." It was really funny. But anyway, you know, I haven't, apart from that, a few potatoes here and there, like little mouthfuls of chips or some roast potatoes at Christmas that didn't seem to hurt anymore. I haven't had any plant matter for, well, apart from red wine, for, 5 years. And it's been an amazing journey, really. I mean, we're all conditioned so much wherever we come from that meat is the worst thing. You know, meat and fat, they got to be the worst things. And yet, as a friend of mine said, who is a carnivore and in fabulous shape, who has her own Facebook group too, she said, "Isn't it funny how everything that's supposed to be caused by meat and saturated fat heals up when all you eat is meat and saturated fat?" And this is what I've been seeing. It's been the most spectacular thing. I started off a Facebook group for 4 or 5 friends Christmas before last. And all of a sudden, there's like 13,000 people in it, and the healing stories I see are beautiful. And then people come up and say, "Oh, you know, why are you saying that everybody needs to eat meat?" I don't. There's nothing dogmatic about this carnivore movement at all. You know, people just heal and they have great differences in body composition and depression lifts and all kinds of things. It's there for people who need it. It's totally safe. And it's just time to get rid of the dogma, I think, and show that there are quite a few problems with plants. If you're not in good health, something, maybe, you know, taking more and more plants out of the diet can help, at least for some time. But it's been fascinating. I mean, I've always been a kind of rebellious nature, so I quite enjoy the fact that I don't eat any plants. You know, I like to sort of stick the finger up at authority.
Yeah. That's a personality trait, I think, isn't it? Yeah. A lot of people just go fuck off to anything that's told to them.
Exactly, yeah.
So the standard dogma at the moment is more fruits, more vegetables, less meat. You go to the food pyramid and it's very much that. You mentioned earlier about the plants and it probably beneficial for people to take those out the diet if there's any immune issues or anything. Can you go into a little bit more why? Why would it be a good idea to take plants out?
Sure. Well, I think people of all dietary types have figured out now that grains are perhaps not particularly good for people. And that a lot of the root of people's problems and digestive issues come with the grains and the, you know, breads, rice, pastas, things like that. That can really mess people up.
Yeah.
But once broken with all of that and processed food, I think people also find that they have trouble with plants. And sometimes the most seemingly innocuous plants like spinach and kale and things like that that are touted as superfoods, but actually they have an enormous amount of toxins in them, which, you know, people are probably outraged now saying, "Oh no, but they're wonderfully good for you, greens and all that." But I don't know. They haven't really existed for a long time, for very long rather. This is not the sort of thing we ate in the wild. We used to eat tubers and we used to eat berries and nuts, fruits, you know, and we ate meat. Meat was always the most prized food. And that grain thing only came in about 10,000 years ago. So that's when we can see health issues coming up in humans when they started farming. Now, I think the thing is people say, "Oh, you've got this 5-a-day thing. You've got to have your fruit and veg." But most of these fruits and veg were not available to us in our ancestry. They're things that we've developed. We bred the fruit to be really sugary, like Mars bars. We've got these funny leaves and stuff that we eat that nobody really likes. I mean, some people kind of pretend to, but I think for me, all of that veg was just like a sponge for butter. It was always quite nice if you put butter and salt on it, but pretty horrible without. Yeah. So I don't miss it at all. And when you actually look into what's in them and what is required in the diet and look at meat and meat products, especially organ meats, fish, stuff like that, you can see that the nutrients that are in there are much more bioavailable. They're not wrapped up in indigestible cellulose, which gives people an awful lot of digestive issues and can lead to autoimmunity. So this myth that we need fruit and vegetables for various nutrients, I don't think it's true at all. You get shouted down for that. But I mean, after 5 years of not eating any, and I'm absolutely fine, and as far as I know, I have no nutritional deficiencies, you start to have a little more confidence, you know, in what you're doing. I've never run into any trouble. And this myth about fiber, you know, and all the vegans always say, well, of course, all the carnivores are all backed up and constipated. I haven't noticed it. My digestion is absolutely perfect. And this is what I see in other people. Once the fiber's taken out, it seems to cause all the things that it's supposed to cure. And if you get somebody with IBS or Crohn's or something like that, and you take the fiber completely away and put them on a carnivore diet, the results are spectacular. So does everybody need to eat like this? No. I think my message is that if everybody actually ate seasonally and locally, according to the light cycles, to be able to give gaps in between the seasons of these plants so that you can deplete the toxins that can build up, like some very nasty ones, like I was mentioning spinach and kale, oxalates. You know, I've had oxalate dumping. I've had the kidney stones from that. It's very, very unpleasant.
Yeah.
And oxalate dumping can come out in many, many ways and can last for years, even when
so,
you take
it. So for people who don't know, Phil, what is an oxalate?
Oxalate is a plant toxin found in many different plants. It's found in a lot of the grains. It's found in particularly high quantities in things like spinach, making all these almond flour cakes and stuff. They're filling themselves with oxalates. And it's almost like at a microscopic level, like a little crystal, a little shard that just penetrates into many tissues, the thyroid, prostate, kidneys particularly, because the kidneys are what's excreting this. And then the oxalate, we know that most kidney stones are calcium oxalate stones. So they combine with the calcium and they form into stones in the kidneys if you're prone to that. Some people can have oxalate dumping, they might just have cloudy urine or whatever and a little twinge in the kidney. But, you know, if you can get full-on kidney stones, and then the docs used to say, don't eat any protein. It's got nothing to do with that. I've eaten nothing but meat for 5 years and I haven't had any more kidney stones. So obviously I'm prone to them. Mm-hmm. And eating nothing but meat hasn't given me any. So it was my habit of juicing spinach before, you know. And I'd have almond spinach, all of that crap in some smoothie in the morning and swill it all down. No wonder I got kidney stones. So that's oxalates. There's many other toxins in plants. Now, I'm not saying they're all completely toxic and you shouldn't eat them. I'm just saying, bear in mind that these toxins are in there. And if we ate them according to nature's cycles, we probably would have, the body would deal with them perfectly well. But we didn't really eat leaves. In our past, ancestrally, not to any great quantity. So if you're eating tons of them now, you could easily get into trouble. But if you're eating ancestral stuff, you're picking the odd nut in season, if you're picking berries, if you're having some tubers here and there, and you're eating a load of meat and fish, I think you'll be fine. But my point is that once broken, it quite often you have to go a little bit further down the end of the scale. But everybody thinks it's towards the juice cleanses and smoothies and veganism and stuff. And really, I would say, from what I've seen, I've tried everything. And I've seen literally thousands of other people who've tried the same. The best elimination diet is to go beef, salt and water, nothing else, until you're symptom free for quite some time. Then reintroduce one thing at a time. Some people have trouble with pork and chicken even. Some people have trouble with eggs, particularly the egg whites. So, you know, if you've got no actual autoimmunity, but you're just overweight and diabetic, you cut the carbs out, eat some leafy green veg, eat a load of cheese and butter and meat and whatever you like, you'll be fine. But if you're autoimmune, it can be a little bit more difficult to get to the root of what is actually causing it and to heal the gut up. I think our friends, Doctors Chabatot and Zsófia Clements at Paleo Medicina in Hungary are showing that the even when there's a little bit of plant matter left in the diet, it's very difficult to heal the gut up, and it never quite heals up. and this being at the root of a lot of autoimmunity. So all I'm saying is, I think you've had my friend Graham Norbury on very recently, and he would have gone on a lot about light cycles.
Yeah.
And this is also important, you know, sun exposure and the high deuterium content of certain fruits and vegetables, and having the sun to be able to deplete that. Deuterium is heavy water that can back up in the mitochondria. And this is a quite a new rabbit hole in health and you know, what actually is causing a lot of these issues like cancer and autoimmunity could very well be down to over, you know, the body getting filled up with too high levels of deuterium, messing about the mitochondria and ruining the cellular function. And the sun depletes that, and the planet will give you the amount of plants that you're probably safe to eat. So if you're down at the equator, fine, eat a load of fruit and nuts and whatever. But if you're in the Arctic, you can see from the polar explorers when they pack rice and beans and whatever, and how quickly they got scurvy and died, and yet a fully carnivore diet, or 98% carnivore diet, like a lot of the Inuit and Sami and a lot of the tribes up there, they were absolutely fine. They didn't get scurvy. They didn't have any problems. They were good. So it depends on the season and latitude. And you know, if you just study diet, you're going to be incredibly confused. You're going to listen to some diet guru who says you've got to eat like this. You've got to eat a Mediterranean diet. I mean, well, where do you live? If you don't live in a Mediterranean, why eat a Mediterranean diet?
Yeah.
And also, a Mediterranean diet is so misconstrued these days. It's misreported. They eat a hell of a lot of sausages and butter and cheeses. You know, everybody thinks it's all salads and olive oil. It's really not. You know, these guys pig out on saturated fat, and they're fine, and they have pretty low rates of heart disease. So whatever else you're eating down there, all these sort of seasonal plants that you need to get flown in at the wrong time of year. You know, as I always say, a banana is not a health food in the north of England in the middle of winter.
Well, that's exactly that exact example you've just given there. This was not December gone, December before. I remember peeling a banana. It was the middle of December. I peeled the banana. I ate it. I thought, what the fuck am I doing here? Why am I eating this? It just makes zero sense whatsoever. And I just started questioning all my vegan belief systems. Just from eating this banana, I think it was snowing and I was eating a banana. This is just not right at all. So
yeah, it's nuts, isn't it? So everybody's doing that and thinking they're having this incredibly healthy diet and bringing all these fruits and plants in from all over the world. And they're sitting there in their high rise flat and they're bathed in artificial light and Wi-Fi. And it's no wonder that things go wrong. Oh, why did it all go wrong? I eat so healthy. I eat my five a day, and I eat, well, there you go, guys.
That's the problem. Yeah.
But you know, it takes so long to see through this, doesn't it? It takes so long to see through all the levels of deceptions in diet. Yeah.
It is. I think personal experience is the only thing that you can actually go on in the end, because there's that much information out there. You mean
what vegans call useless anecdotes?
Well, it's funny because vegans, they tend to like hate on anybody who's not a vegan. And it's real dark, dark hatred a lot of the time. Whereas I joined a couple of the carnivore groups and it's all just banter between one another. It's very lighthearted. And also they seem more switched on to other things in life as well, not just food. It seems that they're, for example, this virus, we might go into it in a little bit. There's different theories about what's going on. And in these carnivore groups, people are actually sharing them. They're not beating each other up. You go into a vegan group and they're all over each other. It's like, oh, you shouldn't be in this group if you think like that. And it's just like, man, this is so militant.
It's funny, isn't it? I've been in a few of those and you get them arguing about whether they're vegan enough or whether they're the right type of vegan. And then if you go in and make a comment as a carnivore, I mean, I was very naive at the start of this and I used to go in there and say, hey guys, you know, have you maybe had a look at this? You know, when you get a whole thread of vegans, maybe somebody's autoimmune, they're all saying, oh, well, take this med and go and see your doc. And I'm saying, are you noticing that maybe it isn't curing this? You know, I was pretty sick myself, and I discovered that this is a way forward. And I didn't really know the vegan mentality. I was never a militant vegan. And you'll get, I think at one point I had like 130 comments within about 10 minutes, all incredibly aggressive of how much I was a murderer. And I thought, this is bizarre. All I want to do is help them out with their joints.
Yeah.
it's so surreal. But a lot of them who've attacked me and insulted me and God knows what, they quite often a year later, they'll say, hey, you know, actually you were right. Can you help me out? My thyroid's blown up or something.
Yeah.
And you see it a lot. So I, you know, I have no problem with it. I don't take it personally. I have a problem with the actual agenda. I mean, I have a problem with people like Dr. Greger who are pushing it, you know, at 10 years younger than me, he's already covered in liver spots and he's completely emaciated, and his, you know, you see him holding a mic and his hat, the skin on his hand looks like my mum's when she was 95 and on her deathbed, you know, just completely wasted away. And there's something going wrong. Is nobody actually looking at Greger and going, hang on a minute, it's not looking so hot, to be honest. No. And yet all these carnivore docs are looking incredible. Oh, they say, well, it's just because the carnivore docs work out. Well, I don't know. I worked out for many years and I went vegan and wasted away. And, you know, I trained for one winter and put a load of the muscle back on, 2013, 2014, went carnivore and then didn't lose any of the muscle. And I've got a lot more to put back on to catch up to where I was. But, and I don't know whether I can be bothered these days. I don't really have those same goals.
No.
It's funny. They can't seem to see what's happening, even with all these vegans falling off the wagon and coming out, like my friend Tim Sheaf. I mean, the stuff that I've chatted to about him and the things that the treatment he's had since that, and he's just a really good guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's really
vegan for years, wasn't he?
Yeah. I was sitting there night fishing one day and I got this message through and I was just chatting to them. And then I realized, oh, hang on, this is Tim Sheaf. And then we Skyped and we chatted and we became friends, and just such a lovely, genuine guy and just wants to help people and be honest. And yet the horrendous abuse he's had for this, you know, it's so weird, but I think it's all part of the whole massive agenda from corporations and yeah, whoever it is that's up there at the top. It's not in their interest to have us eating meat and being really healthy and thinking for ourselves. I think through history, these plant-based diets have been used to keep people docile, stroke controlled, aggressive, you know, like troops. And then people will say, oh, look at this army, they used to march on their on oats and whatever. Well, yeah, because they were just expendable.
And
this ridiculous film Game Changers, where they're going on about the gladiators being plant-based, and you're like, they were plant-based to make them a bit more chubby so that they could take a few more sword blows. You know, these guys were also expendable. They were slaves too. And you can see through history how this has been used and in spiritual circles as well. Mm. I think this whole veggie diet thing, it kind of just makes people very impressionable, and it gives a sort of black and white thinking. I mean, this sounds like I'm being really offensive. I'm not. I've seen it in myself. I've seen it in thousands of people. I mean, many of the people on the carnivore groups are ex-vegans. And you can see them discussing a lot about how their depression's lifted, how their ability to reason has come back, and to be able to see subjects in grey and in colour rather than in black and white. And when the brain is fed with the proper nutrients, it can see these things, you know. It doesn't get stuck in these one little train of thought. It amazes me when you can actually say to them, start talking to them about crop deaths. You know, it seems so obvious to me. Even when I was vegan, I would have gone, wow, I just never thought about it. All the land is cleared, the soil's ruined, the so many species are made homeless, that all the ecosystems are turned upside down. Then they come and plant the stuff, and any animals that do get moved back in get, you know, decimated or completely obliterated with pesticides. And then a few might come back in, and then the combine harvesters go in and chew them up. And to me, it's so obvious. And you just have to say that, and you go, that is what happens. It is what happens. It's undeniable. And so then they go on about the compassionate diet, and you can't seem to change their mind whatsoever. They can't seem to see that logic. I mean, I think anyone should eat what they want, but at least be honest about that. You know, there isn't a compassionate diet. There are a lot of problems with plants for certain people once the plant toxins build up. And if you don't eat any meat or fish or eggs or whatever, you are going to have a lot of deficiencies. And the more plants you eat, the less you'll absorb from the meat. You know, so many vegetarians go, I'll add a couple of chicken breasts to my rice and dal. Yeah. You know, it doesn't really work very well because their guts are already wrecked. And then the meat upsets them. They go, meat hurts me. No, you've been ruined by the plants.
Yeah.
You know, and so, and then all the studies that were done on meat eaters saying that it caused cancer, it really didn't show that. Plus, they were eating tons of other stuff as well. So, you know, I can always point out McDonald's is a plant-based meal. It's fries and it's vegetable oils and it's bun and it's lettuce and tomato and stuff. If you threw all that shit away and just ate the burger patty, you'd be fine. It wasn't the meat that caused it in the first place. So my thing is just to get people to stop thinking of meat as Satan and stop thinking of vegetables and fruit as gods, and just meet somewhere in the middle, you know, and realize that if you do have certain symptoms and you do have some problems, then just be open to this. If someone comes to me for consultation and we're talking about diet and they say, oh yeah, well I eat just a standard diet. And I say, well, I tell you what, you can eat steak all day with butter on it. They go, great. But then you have a vegan comes to you and you say, well, you know, man, you've got IBS, you're pretty emaciated, you're skinny fat, your thyroid's in trouble. It would probably be a good idea to cut all the plants out and eat meat for our, no, then you've got 3 months of deprogramming ahead of you. Exactly. It's a really difficult thing. So
it's a belief system thing then, and it isn't just a physical thing.
Yeah, yeah. Because some guy who doesn't care for his health and just eats McDonald's all day has always thought them. We love meat. That's why vegans make Beyond Burgers and stuff. So we love meat. We're always trying to imitate it. And so when some guy comes along who eats nothing but McDonald's, and then he gets told he can eat nothing but steak, he's fine because he thinks that's naughty and disgraceful. And so he's rebellious anyway, and he'll eat it and get better. but the vegans won't, even though we mustn't give in to our gratuitous taste sensation. You know, all this nonsense, our desires, our carnal desires and desires. And let's get, I mean, when you see that whole thing of where it came from and squashing down the carnal desires as well, you know, with Kellogg and
his God, yeah.
Brilliant one, isn't it? I mean, we tell a vegetarian that actually cornflakes were designed to stop you wanking. it's brilliant. And this is where the sunshine breakfast came from. Yeah. It's beautiful that all of this veggie thing is just based on such nonsense. I've got a bit of a craze at the moment. I keep mentioning it, but this program, I'm not a great telly fiend, but this program, Naked and Afraid, has fascinated me.
They just sit around with a cock and balls out, didn't they? And
They just put, it started with just one guy and one woman, and they put them out into somewhere like Ecuador or some rainforest or out in the savannah, African countries. And they say, right, you've got to survive for 21 days. And then they had to build shelters. They got a knife and they got a pot, or they got a fire starter, or they got something like two items or something they could choose. Then they started doing it with bigger groups of people, which is fantastic psychology. It's very interesting, for 40 days. But you can just see that there is no fucking way that humans survived by eating plants. Half the time when they eat plants, they end up really poisoning themselves and get taken in an ambulance. They're shouting for a medic over the intercom or the walkie-talkie. And it's so funny when you think that if anybody could act, and these are in hot places. Mm. Now, what the hell are you going to do in the Northern Hemisphere? It's not going to happen. So this is it. It's so obvious when you see it that the whole dietary thing has been upside down. And that leads us obviously into the rest of everything. What the hell is going on with everything? The virus?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
With light, with the news, with media. There's
well, all this is interlinked. Much. It's all interlinked, isn't it? It's like one big holistic package. Yeah. Diet is just one little part of that. That's, in my opinion, it's just been covered up for possibly centuries. Yeah. In order to keep man, in my opinion, in order to keep mankind suppressed as not knowing the true natures, keeping consciousness levels low. So, which leads nicely into this this virus, I think, because I've been catching up with your Human Unleashed episodes the last few days, and they've been interesting. Jeremy Ayres likes to get in there quick, doesn't he, and give his lot.
That's what he's been studying this, I think, more than us. I mean, Graham's been up on it too.
Yeah.
But Jeremy's been really following this whole rabbit hole for many years, and I'm not so up on it. I've really, in the past couple of weeks, I've learned so much. But even before knowing that, there was something something was smelling a bit wrong in this virus thing. Just, it's funny, when you've been down a rabbit hole really deeply, like you were mentioning with the carnivore people talking about loads of other subjects as well and seeming to be more in tune with things than quite a lot of other dietary groups maybe are online. And I've noticed this too. It's interesting because most people have come to carnivory after trying everything else. And so they've been through all the levels of bollocks and deception and around diet. And you start to see patterns just immediately in other things like climate change and and then people get extremely angry and start calling you a climate denier. this word denier, no, we're just questioning. I don't have the answers.
No, that's right.
But I know that Greta doesn't have the answers either, and it's got nothing to do with burping and farting cows. When you see this nonsense given as the solutions, you know, the problem, fear, solution thing.
Yeah, yeah.
That sort of cycle of things, you can see it in so many things, and it's usually the wrong solutions. Whether there is an actual thing to be worried about, like climate change, I don't think we've got so much to do with it as we think, as most people think. I'm not an out and out climate denier. Whatever we're doing to the planet, I don't know whether it's changing the climate, but it's certainly fucking up a load of the ecosystems.
Yeah. Yeah.
So to put ruminant animals back on the land, restore the ecosystems, get rid of monocropping, beautiful. You know, there's so many things we could do, but none of it comes down to going plant-based. And that's something that just doesn't tally with me. I mean, look at Greta with her autism, and it's been shown that a high-fat carnivore diet is probably the best way to reverse autism. And yet she's autistic and she's being used as a puppet. I did a long chat about that with Bart Kay a while ago. We put it up on both of our channels. But you know, is Greta a messiah or a puppet? And then people jump up just seeing that and they go, oh, middle-aged men getting triggered by a young girl again. Yeah. You know, it's not that at all. We're not criticizing her. It's not her fault at all. She's being used, I think, and everybody seems to be being used, and they find these useful idiots in various stages of knowledge. You know, somebody who's woken up to a whole load of things but hasn't woken up to a few other things is far more useful to these people than somebody who just swallows the whole thing.
Yeah.
The whole story. And I think this is why I love the Human Unleashed, the four of us, the Jeremy Ayres, Graham Norbury, Ben Hunt and me. That all of us just, we've never had any disagreement about anything, because there's always the thing of, oh, you might be right. How do we know? You know, it's just a matter of asking more and more questions. And if everybody did that, eventually the shit would be cleared away and we might find the diamonds. Because it's only in asking more and more questions. Some of the questions seem to be a bit nuts, but why not? Just ask them, see where they go. You know, I've been wrong a million times. I've asked a load of really stupid questions that have led nowhere. but I've asked a load of questions that have led me to being able to reverse several chronic diseases that would have had me, you know, well into the system by now, rattling with meds and fat and probably sitting in bed diabetic with ulcers, with massive amounts of joint problems and heart issues. And that's where I can see it probably would have gone over the last 10 years if I hadn't just woken up to a load of the shit in the dietary thing and figured out all the ancestral connections. And now, you know, apart from one sticky knee and a wrist that doesn't completely bend, that's probably been like that since the early 90s anyway, but was never diagnosed, I'm absolutely fine. And it's very rewarding to do that. So now I'm looking at a load of these other rabbit holes, and the boys in The Human Unleashed are leading me down a load of those. And the whole things that I'm discovering, and whether they're true or not, you just look at them, you know, and understand them. I've been looking at a whole load of things about this Q phenomenon recently. Mm. And this is so interesting. If that happened, isn't that beautiful? But then as soon as you mention it, people go, oh, you're a nutter, you're a conspiracy theorist. No, I'm looking at it because it's incredibly fascinating. It might not happen. It might be the Chinese trying to take over the world. It might be trying to all force us into plant-based diets and forced vaccinations, you know, for Bill Gates to get rid of half the population. But honestly, one thing I do know is it ain't what we're being told on the news.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Exactly. That's right. All of that.
I have no idea. I haven't got the answers at all, but I know for certain, with 100% accuracy, that what we're being told is not correct.
Yeah.
It's not the truth. That's it. That's all I say to people.
Exactly. I mean, well, I mean, look at how it's been downgraded somewhere hidden away in a corner of the government website. It's been downgraded as not really that bad.
Yeah.
And then we've got, hang on, I've got to turn my phone off. I've rudely left the damn thing on.
Don't worry, man.
Oh, it's not making a noise. It's just somebody's calling. It can buzz away in the corner. I forgot to turn it on, waiting for your Zoom link. I think what we're being told as well, I saw something else recently where you see that how many of these cases are probably being attributed to COVID when it's other stuff. I'm not saying there's not something going on, but it might be a completely different mechanism. Like at this time of year, you usually do get a lot of, like Jeremy says, at this sort of spring equinox, you get an awful lot of respiratory system problems. Mm. My 2 years, in 2 weeks' time, it's the anniversary of my mum died of pneumonia. And that was at this time of year. It came in, it was triggered by something that she got, the Australian flu that time. And that was going around, and she got that, and then she recovered from that, and then she got pneumonia, and then she recovered from that, and then she got pneumonia again and died. And it was all over the period between Christmas and March. And this happens an awful lot. But even this fascinating rabbit hole of the whole pleomorphic germ theory, or pleomorphic, however you pronounce it, with the conflicting theories of Pasteur and Bechamp, and whether it's the germ or the terrain, whether viruses are actually something that's passed between people, or whether they're debris created by cells as they're getting rid of toxins. The whole thing is really interesting. And people go, oh no, science, you're a science denier as well. That's another one, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, it's just, I mean, look at dietary science. It's so shit.
Just
it's
questioning the narrative, that's all it is. You're just questioning what you're being told.
So why would you not question it? Because they don't seem to have a test for it. If they really understood exactly what was going on, they would have a perfect test, like the sort of test that you have for somebody with a broken leg that's the bone is sticking through. You look at the fucking leg, bone sticking through, you've got a broken leg with the bone sticking through. Yay, okay, right. I'm not going to deny that. It's obvious. You can see it with your own eyes. But the climate change thing, the virus thing, I cannot prove it. I can't prove it one way or the other. But I just know that the best way, obviously, all of these things, is to make sure that your immune system is really strong. I don't vaccinate my kids, but do I just hope for the best and feed them Cocoa Pops in the morning? No, they're pretty much carnivore, my kids. Yeah. And they're incredibly bright, intelligent, very fit, lean. They're fantastic. And strengthen their immune system. So when they get a cold, they'll sort of sniffle for an evening and then they're fine. They might even get a hell of a temperature, but they get it really fast and then it goes really fast. It's almost like an hour sometimes. And then some of their friends at school are off for a week or whatever. Yeah. And you can see these friends are kind of, you know, a lot of them are very, very, like you said, fleshy, not exactly fat, but they're kind of soft. They're not that sort of muscular kid look.
Yeah.
And they've been vaccinated and they eat a lot of cereals and pasta and they get forced to eat sort of vegetables and fruit on top of that shit as well to keep them healthy. And is it working? No, it's not. All you see when you go in school is little huddles of parents and they're always talking about something that's gone wrong with their kid. Oh, he's on antibiotics again. And he's had to have his ear drained again or something. And you hear these little whispers of conversation. You go back around. Everybody's always talking about health. Something's gone wrong with their kid or them. And as they get older, it happens more and more. And so to me, it's just a no brainer. I've seen what's possible when you tell the doctors to piss off and do it on your own. And I see thousands and thousands of other people now who are doing exactly the same thing. And with the kids, you just strengthen the immune system, you strengthen your own immune system. And you do this with everything that Graham was probably on about with the light cycles in the last, in the last thing. If you understand the stuff that Graham understands about light cycles, you'll understand any of this diet stuff. It kind of falls into place. Yeah. Everything falls into place. And once the immune system's as strong as it can be, then to me, that's what I like. And it's in your own power. It's not like you've given away your power. They're going to be queuing up for this vaccination if they invent the vaccine or they make the vaccine. And my biggest worry about the whole thing is, you know, whether it's a financial reset or whatever by the bad guys or maybe even by the good guys, if you believe the Q thing. But the vaccination kind of bothers me. If it goes down that route, it's going to be very difficult if they really do force that. I don't know how they would. I don't know if they would. Because so many people are doubting it now.
I don't think they'd need to force it though, Phil.
No, they wouldn't force it. As long as I can say no, they will be. It'll absolutely sell itself. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's one paranoid end of it where they say, oh, they're going to have military police coming around and banging on your door and forcing you to have it, or at least you won't have any job or you won't be able to go to school or you won't be able to travel. Now, I'm not really panicked. I don't think it's going to go to that. But in the little worry at the back of my mind, that's the only thing that really worries me about this whole business. I have these fantasies of what the hell would I do? Am I upstairs with a machine gun? Like, stay away from my fucking kids.
Yeah. Well, you know what? When human beings get to that state, I mean, I'm a big believer in gun ownership for people to protect themselves against things such as that. You know, if you're an arsehole, you'll kill someone regardless of whether you've got a gun or not. You can kill it whatever you want, can't you? In America, I think all the guns have sold out, haven't they? I think in the shops.
Yeah, well, actually, Jeremy and I, when this whole thing kicked off, we realised that we were actually in a gun shop at the same time.
Ah.
We were only in there getting air rifles in case we had to pop the odd rabbit, you know, if the food ran out. Because as a carnivore and only being allowed to buy three items, you're like, oh, hang on. Is it going to run out? I mean, fortunately, the missus is a nurse and she goes in and goes NHS and they let her buy whatever she
wants. Right, that's good. So
they kind of got the NHS on a pedestal at the moment, haven't they? But popping the odd wood pigeon and the odd rabbit out the trees, rabbits in the trees, but, you know, going out and getting the odd wood pigeon out of the tree and getting rabbits, it's something that's occurred to me. Whether it'll ever come to it, I don't know, but I don't think an air rifle is going to do much good against the armed police.
No, it's not. It's not. It's just for self-protection. I think that's and I think that's why the countries that do have gun ownership tend to be freer, as loosely as I can put it, tend to.
Yeah. Well, quite possibly. This is, again, something that I haven't looked at much, but it makes so much sense. Mm-hmm. I always thought, well, what's the point? You know, you don't need them in England. You don't. But when you start seeing stuff like this come up, you wonder whether you actually do, you know?
Mm. Yeah. So I want to cover something you mentioned earlier, but you didn't go into deuterium.
Deuterium, yes.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about that, because I know you said heavy water. What does that mean?
Okay. Well, I'll give a little intro to it, but I would say that to get really down that rabbit hole, get Graham back on again for a part two for his deuterium book, because his knowledge on light and deuterium is way, way beyond mine. I know what to do and why exactly, but Graham can run you through the whole cellular biology of it. Well, deuterium, to be very basic, is an extra isotope on hydrogen. So you get D2O rather than H2O. So it creates like heavy water. Now, Graham put it to me very nicely once that it's like a fat guy getting stuck in a turnstile at a concert or a tube train or whatever, and the thin guys can't get through after him. They could get through easily, but it's wedged up with one fat guy.
With you.
And this is the same with, you get too many of those running through the mitochondria, and the, basically the engines just blow up the mitochondria, which are the engines. And the cell, really, the mitochondria, its only function is to produce water. And so if you're eating a load of saturated fat, it allows the mitochondria to produce its own deuterium-depleted water. And the lower the deuterium, to a certain level, deuterium is natural. There's nothing bad in nature. But it's got to be in the right proportion. So if you get too much deuterium in the body, it can lead to problems with cells, problems with replication of cells, and so consequently cancers and whatever. Now, high deuterium foods are sugary foods, processed foods, grains, the seeds of plants. Eggs are actually quite high in deuterium because they're part, anything that's part of the reproductive cycle is high in deuterium because it promotes growth. Like, you know, deuterium is great in kids. It promotes growth. Nature knows what it's doing. But if you have too much later in life, when the body can't deplete it very well, it doesn't have good redox potential to sort of, you know, to have good cellular turnover and whatever, then you're going to have to take steps to do that. If you're just kind of a little bit out of sorts or got some mild autoimmunity or something, you don't really need to go down the full rabbit hole and drink loads of deuterium depleted water and whatever. But maybe if you have pancreatic cancer or something, you need to cover all the bases, which would be getting out in the sun as much as possible, getting in nature, grounding, getting cold thermogenesis, you know, getting chilled out, meditating, doing some emotional work, eating a very, very low carbohydrate diet and low deuterium diet, which is basically the same thing, pretty much, with a few exceptions like leaves. They're very low in deuterium, but then they might also have the toxin problems with the oxalates and whatever. So as long as you just really understand what's in everything and what's happening, you can look at this health thing through so many different lenses. And as you've, I think, the mark of finding a really good lens to look through health at is, does it tie up with nature? If you're looking at some weird diet that somebody's dreamed up and says like everybody in the world should eat it, it's just insane. But if you can see why a certain thing would work in season, you know, high deuterium foods like fruits, they grow in the summertime. They grow when there's sun enough to deplete the deuterium in whoever's eaten it. It just all ties in with nature. It's beautiful. And this whole business of deuterium is another very good lens to look through that does tie in with nature. Now, there's some great researchers out there. I mean, Jack Cruz has done some fantastic stuff on deuterium. Laszlo Boros, he's great. He had a twin brother. They were both doctors. His brother died of cancer, went for the chemo and whatever, and he got checked after his brother died and found he had the same cancer. He was a researcher into deuterium, didn't do any of the standard treatments, and fixed his own cancer. And this was like 2006 or something, I think.
Nice.
And now some of his talks and whatever and the results that he's had with patients. And there's a beautiful podcast. If you look my name up on YouTube, Phil Escott, deuterium, I've done a little like 10-minute thing on it. But underneath is a link to this great podcast on Luke Story's, what's his podcast? Why have I forgotten it? The Lifestylist. And it's Laszlo Boros and and Dr. Q Collins. And they're both pretty funny, actually. They're both quite entertaining, but it's 3 hours long. And I swear every 5 minutes, you'll just have to switch it off and go, I'm going to have to let that sink in. Wow. Now that makes sense. Now that makes sense. It's fantastic. And Graham is actually brilliant at demystifying it too. Yeah. He's very cool. But basically, a load of foods are quite high in deuterium. Deuterium occurs naturally on the planet in everything. It's about, I think it's 155 parts per million, usually in seawater. I'm trying to get into Graham territory now, and he's probably going to listen to this and slap me. God, that was wrong. But the point is that it's having a deuterium level in the body of like over 140 or so is a sign that you might be heading for some chronic disease. Okay. You know, get it below that, and it doesn't necessarily mean that, but you know, get it below that, and you can see that the body is clearing deuterium much more efficiently. Mm-hmm. Deuterium is supposed to be in there, but just not in too much, you know. These things all need to be in some kind of balance. Nature doesn't create these things. And as Jeremy always says, the body never knows how to work against you. Whatever it's doing, even however bad it is, it's just probably doing it in a bit of a panic as a last resort. So we just need to take away all the influences that stop the body healing itself. And I think that's the most important thing that we should get into medicine. But that's very difficult for docs because they have a huge ego. And they want to be the ones seen to be curing you and being looked up to. And, you know, there's some fabulous docs out there, of course, absolutely brilliant ones who are waking up now and going down all these rabbit holes themselves. But if you understood about plant toxins, deuterium, if you understood really about insulin resistance and how many things that leads to when people are overdosing on all the carbs, you just wouldn't need any of this. Nonsense, any of these pharmaceuticals. And the more levels you look at it at, you can see how many ways the body puts up with all this stuff. To me, it's not a wonder that there's so much chronic disease. It's a wonder that there's so little with what we actually throw at ourselves. I'm wondering anybody lives past 30, really. It's crazy what goes in. But when you can see all the cellular disruptors going on, like artificial light, Wi-Fi, deuterium, plant toxins, and you put it all together and have this beautifully holistic view, and it's such an eye-opener, and it makes the medical system, apart from their trauma and acute care, they just look like complete babies. You know, let's this person's got some ailment, let's fill them full of a chemical and see if we can knock the symptoms off. And
but we haven't got a healthcare system, have we? We've got a disease management system.
It's a completely
inverted way of thinking.
It's got to change at some point. And I'm hoping that all of this virus thing and this Q thing comes about. It's not like I believe in this Q thing. I really hope, of all the alternative views, that this is going to be the one that sticks. And then I think it's going to be much easier to bring down a load of these things, these ridiculous paradigms like the medical one. I mean, just imagine if that did happen and this Q thing is right and this COVID thing turns out to be either a convenient time to do it or something that's used as a smokescreen deliberately. To get rid of all of these ruling classes who have been manipulating people in many ways, from the medical system with the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds, and all the way down through all this paedophilia thing in Hollywood. And when you see how it all ties in, even if some of it's nonsense, a hell of a lot of it isn't. I can already see that. I can already see that without there being any kind of QAnon movement.
Yeah.
But if it is, I mean, it would be so beautiful. Imagine, right? It goes from one day to the next, where one day you're being told there's this terrible virus and you've got to isolate and you've got to not talk to anybody and you've got to, and then suddenly the internet goes down for a few days or something and it comes back on and it's like, right. That was all bullshit. I mean, I will be laughing. I'll be applauding.
I'll be so smug as well.
Oh, it'll be so beautiful, won't it? I mean, when I see the terror it's causing, I've seen some weird things. I saw a guy in a supermarket yesterday, and we had to queue up to go in, you know. And then when I got in there, there was people some people were fine, but some people were obviously a bit panicked. And one guy in particular, he was really freaking out at the checkout, and he wouldn't talk to the cashier, and he was standing back, and he was sort of doing his card at arm's length like that, and he had a mask on. But this mask, I don't know what had happened. He'd gone to Amazon and he'd gone mask or whatever you type in when you buy these stupid things. And they'd obviously sold out. And so had the kids. So he bought like a hamster size. I don't know what the hell it was, but it was about that big. And he was just covering his mouth. And he's breathing through his nose. I mean, what the fuck good is that going to do? I mean, it was funny, but I felt so sorry for the dude, because so many people are that panicked and this fear that's going on.
That's the real virus.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely it is. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And what's that going to do? Even if this thing is real and it's being passed from person to person. If you're at home absolutely freaked out, there's nothing that's going to destroy your sleep and destroy your immune system like a state of constant fight or flight.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Operating from the amygdala, just constant looking around and wondering in fear. But this goes back to the pathogen thing again. You've got an external enemy that's there to come and get you. You can't do nothing about it, regardless of how healthy you are. That's essentially the narrative that's been pushed onto us. Yeah. But give yourself a fighting chance. Even if you believe that, just give yourself a fighting chance. They're still selling booze, fakes, cigarettes, all the GMO stuff, sugar laden food. They're still selling all that stuff. If they really give a fuck about you, they wouldn't be selling it, would they?
Yeah. Well, the trouble is they'd have to admit that all that they told you about healthy whole grains and fruit and veg was a load of old crap in the first place.
Yeah.
So people are going out and stocking up on food that's going to make them really shit. And so then they need all that bog roll.
That's just unbelievable, that is. Unbelievable.
Yeah. What a waste of money that is. I mean, just eat some meat and fat, and you do one nice, clean, one white wonder a day, and you're done. You don't end up, you know. I remember when I used to use half a bog roll trying to get myself cleaned up after a vegan dump. And then you'd have to get the power hose out for the toilet as well. And no, it was bad times. But yeah, you're right. It's the fear. I don't know where it's going to go. I don't know. We've had some great chats on the Human Unleashed about it, and I'm so excited, to be honest. I mean, I'm really enjoying this time. I've got a few financial worries, where I'm sort of trying to pull everything in. We've got a few houses and we have tenants in them, and I don't know if they're going to pay. And actually, we live in a house which we don't own, so which is weird because we own another house but we don't own this one. And so I'm wondering, are we going to pay our rent if they don't pay their rent? And there's all sorts of uncertainties here, but I think people will be pretty understanding. I think there's talks of Canadian banks getting rid of credit card debt.
Yes, I've heard that, yeah.
I don't know where that's going. Maybe the whole financial reset and debt gets wiped out. That'd be very nice too.
Yeah. Well, it'd be nice. Would it be, is natural the word? Would it be right?
Well,
since created a beast that set itself, I think that's probably more the case.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, when you look down again, this is something, because I'm just an old hippie, you know, and I've really not looked at the monetary system properly, but I have done recently. And when you do see and really understand how it's all based on debt,
it's a fraud. It's
a complete. It's so fraud. Bizarre. Yeah, so I would have, you know, I have no qualms whatsoever about letting credit card debts go. And maybe if they let go of the mortgages, you know, and then I can give my tenants a cheaper place to live, and I can afford to really make the houses nicer. Because when you get charged that many mortgages, that much on mortgages, and then they put them up and up, you get squeezed so much, you can't make sure that everything is cool for the tenants. You know, things start to get a bit tatty. And we always had beautiful houses. And now, after a while, they're getting pretty tatty, some of them. And I'm thinking, I want to get in there and really sort them out. And to be able to, I think it would just help people across the board if that sort of thing went. But then again, I don't know what happens. I mean, if mortgages disappear, do the mortgage companies swallow up the houses and we lose them, or do we? You see, those are the fiddly little things that I have going around in my head. I don't have any problem with this virus or anything like that. And I don't have to fear. I think it's kind of hilarious. I'm getting a little bit stir crazy because I want to go fishing. This is the best time of year to go out and spend nights out carp fishing, and I absolutely love that. And I'm missing that, and I'm missing playing gigs. But I have, fortunately, I have a family that I really get on with.
Oh, that's good. That's always useful.
The missus and I get on really well. We have a tremendous amount of fun. And I really, my kids are just brilliant. They're not crazy sugar monsters. So they're not absolutely screaming. They have their moments here in the house. They fought constantly over who was going to use the computer last night until I had to shut it down because I found they were using it without Iris on. And they had blue light coming in, so that was no good. They fooled their dad, who was just too vegged out to check up on them. But yeah, I think it's a great time. I think a lot of people are going to go home and actually realize probably they were in some real shit jobs that they didn't want to be in, and they're going to find some creativity, and they're going to find their path in life. Maybe I think the longer it goes on, actually a lot of it, even if this is some kind of sinister plot with the Chinese taking over everything, or people trying to force vaccinations and bankrupt everybody, I think people are going to have some time off to chill out and wake up. And I think people are going to be waking up on many different levels, you know, to the next level, whatever that level is for them. And I think perhaps even if it is a nasty plot, it's going to backfire on them in some way in the long run. Because you can't control an awakened population, really. No, and as one of these lovely expressions I like, the next Buddha is the Sangha. You know, the second coming of the Buddha is going to be the Sangha, the crowd, the everybody, all the people together. It's no longer so easy to have one person set up as a hero, as a guru. People are getting a little bit more wise to that. Obviously, there's always people who will swallow everything they're told. But I don't know. You were mentioning my interview with Rick Archer on Buddha at a Gas Pump, and everybody who comes on there seems to mention some kind of an awakening with everybody waking up. But I often don't think it's going to be all these lovely flowers. Oh, everybody's got enlightened. Everybody knows we're all one. I think it's going to be on a much more practical level most of the time. And it's just going to be able to let people see through the myriad layers of bullshit that have gone on in all of the areas that we've talked about. And I think that's going to be a beautiful thing. I'm going to find it absolutely hilarious. I love it when vegans wake up. I love it when somebody sort of wakes up that the monetary system isn't particularly cool, or that really sitting there with a television in their bedroom is not the best way to get a good night's sleep. And, you know, all these little things that we're waking up to about the modern world, eventually then we can get back to more of an ancestral way of living, but using modern technology as well and making it safe. And that'll be a great society. That'll be tremendous fun, you know?
Agreed. So what I tend to find is, people who have done a bit of spiritual work and a bit of inner emotional stuff tend to be the people who have become individualized. And although they might know, as you say, everything's one and all this, which is all fluffy a lot of the time, I appreciate that. But the collective seems to actually be the enemy. They actually seem to be the ones that are that sure of what they're being told is true. That's the collective. Whereas the individual say, hang on, that ain't possibly the way it's going. So there's an ironic pattern that it's actually the individual who sees everything maybe slightly differently, maybe read a few religious texts or whatever, who actually notice that everything is one, right? But the collective that sits over here, who is the one that is actually seen as the enemy. And it's just like, whoa, hang on, you're being fed a lie, you're buying into all this bullshit. But once you've done a bit of work, you seem to come over to this side and look at it and completely separate yourself from it, become objective from it. You know what I mean? Does it make sense?
Yeah, it does. I think there's a big, there's a whole load of misconceptions around enlightenment and waking up, just as there are around everything else. And I think most religious and spiritual movements actually do a lot more damage than good. they sort of dangle this carrot of redemption or awakening or whatever it is that they're offering to keep people out of the present and to see exactly what's going on. It's usually, well, very often you get these big awakening stories when somebody lets go of any of the principles that they followed, spiritual principles or religious principles. And I think the thing that people often miss, they see this unity and oneness thing touted around. And we must get rid of all our desires. We must be desireless. We must be... See, this is a total misconception. What actually happens is that, yes, you realize that there is a complete connection and we are on one level just sense organs of the infinite, as Rick often puts it on Bhatgat, instead of actual individuals. But at the same time, we are individuals. There's an old saying that I'll paraphrase it. I don't know exactly who said it or what, but the gist of it is that the mark of a developed consciousness is being able to accept paradox. And the thing about awakening is it's a paradox in itself. You do have that sense that can happen gradually or suddenly, a sense that never goes away, that everything is one and you are the same as this person and that person, and consciousness is flowing through you rather than emanating from you. You have that sense, but then also you do have the sense that you are an individual. And you know, these people who get caught up in this non-duality and Advaita thing, and will you pass the salt? Well, there's nobody to pass the salt. Yeah. Oh, fuck. You know,
who is passing the salt? Who is passing the salt?
Yeah, pass the fucking salt, you know, before I slap you. It's like, yes, okay, on one level, but it's a bit annoying to always come from that. We're individuals as well, because we're supposed to be. And we're given desires, and we're given interests and passions. And we're not supposed to squash these down for the sake of worshipping a guru and doing enormous spiritual disciplines and whatever. We're given these paths in life to find. And when you do, you become far more of a useful citizen, because you're doing something that is your passion instead of something you're forced to do to pay off an imaginary loan by a bank or a credit card. Yeah. So when you look at the ancestral model of it, we knew what we were supposed to do. Everybody in the tribe had a place. They knew what they were supposed to do. You had the shaman here, you had the hunters here, and generations had done that. And they didn't think, oh, you know, I really should go and get a job on Wall Street or whatever. They had no idea what Wall Street was. they didn't have, you know, they didn't say to the shaman, you haven't got proper qualifications from a university. No, he had experience from life passed down from generations. The house that they built was not going to get repossessed. They didn't have these fears, you know, and they had a lot of other problems. You can see they have a lot of other problems, but those problems are generally in the present. It's not like, you know, panicking about the mortgage and whatever. So you go back to that ancestral model, and I believe they were probably all awakened. They all understood that complete symbiotic relationship that we have with nature, with all the plants, with all the other animals. And they had tremendous respect for something that they killed and ate. Yeah. They weren't vegan back there. They weren't vegetarian. They didn't have people protesting about them, you know, killing a wild boar or something and roasting it. That was a matter for celebration. There was nobody over in the corner of the camp going, you know, wild boar rights and peace. And it was bollocks, because they took what they needed, they ate what they needed. And that whole thing, if we knew exactly what was going on and everything was laid bare, we could pretty much return to something like that. We could see an end to chronic disease, really. We could, the land could be replenished and people could eat, whether they eat all meat or not. You know, this business of, oh, you can't feed the planet like that. Well, actually you can. there's about a third of it you can use for grazing land, only about 2 or 3% you can use for crops.
Yeah.
So it'd be a very, very efficient and much kinder way to all the other wild animals around, to the land, to the environment, to global warming, if it even has anything to do with that, which I doubt if it does, but you know, whatever. So I think it's, this is the thing about awakening and about, like you say, everybody should find their place, because then you get the people really passionate about something that they want to do. If somebody wants to say, like Jeremy, who's had this passion for 30 years to heal people, who you should get him on for a chat, you know.
I'll message him after this, yeah.
Yeah, he's just fantastic and so fascinating. He's had like 30 years of doing this beautiful work with people. And somebody who has a passion for doing it like that, actually for healing people, not to, you know, be an employee of the drug companies and get nice, send off on nice conventions every year, even when they realize they're not actually fixing people. And you'd see people come out with absolute passions. And I think that's beautiful. And that to me is a more useful side of awakening, because this business of actually awakening, that moment that people talk about of a basic enlightenment, I guess, which is an awful word to use because it's become so tainted, but
yeah, agreed.
Where you do kind of realize that everybody's just one, and this whole thing is just, you're just a part, a little chip in the computer. And that doesn't go away. That the difference between somebody who's had that and somebody who hasn't is like 0.00001%. And people chase it all their lives and put these people on pedestals and get stuck in vegetarianism, you know. And all my friends in the TM movement dying of cancer now because they're eating rice and dal in the north of England, and they're all emotionally retarded. And I can say that, guys, if any of you are watching that, because I had to do so much work on it. That was half of the reason why I got sick. It's just the luck of the draw whether you get arthritis or cancer, right? And it wipes you out quicker. So, you know, all of these disconnects that's been caused by religion and spirituality. And just to get back to the fact that, yeah, we're all one. We all need to just chill out, help each other out, and find our own passion, and don't squash down our desires like some guru or some mythical or semi-mythical religious person in some old book has told us. It's all real common sense in the end, and just having a bullshit radar, really, and being able to just look at certain parts of life immediately in the press or whatever and go, yeah, right. Instead of, you know, you just look at it and go, yeah, all right, guys.
Anything it is, you just sort of, well, from my experience, you just sort of surrender to it anyway. It's just like, okay.
Yeah,
if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. There's not a damn thing I can do about it.
That's a beautiful attitude too. Yeah. I mean, that's all we can do. We can't, because people ask us on this Human Unleashed thing when we're going on about exactly what's going on with money and with the banks, and we're working on a book at the moment, the Red Pill, it's that Ben Hunt is writing, and he should get Ben on too.
Yeah, we'll get him on.
Get him on too, because he's fantastic, and he's got his insights into stuff. I mean, I thought I was a good writer until I read stuff by Ben Hunt, and I just don't know how he does it. We meet up every week for a chat, and on the two latest ones that we've done on the COVID thing, which is free part of the website at thehumanunleashed.com. On the two latest ones, fifth and sixth part, I think, we bring a guy called John Gusty in, who's a great friend of ours, who's a wonderful guy, very successful in many aspects of business and publishing. A genius, really. And he's become a great friend. Jeremy went out to help his wife, who has MS, and got to know him very well. And he's also a bass player. You know, he's a great musician. And hopefully, when we do a carnival retreat out there, we'll bung a band together in Tennessee and play. But he's amazing too. And I don't know what on those latest ones, it's we're going down these avenues, but we can't come up with any solutions. People say, what do we do? What do we do? I don't know.
Yeah.
None of us know what to do. It's just to be aware of it and take away the fear. Do whatever it is you're normally doing. I mean, I can see a load of the carnivores freaking out as well. You know, they had the diet and they had the light, right? And they had everything. And now they've got caught in this COVID thing. And whether it's true or not, I mean, even if we're all going down, it's going to get wiped out. What do you want? Do you want to have a really nice time with your family for these last couple of weeks? Or do you want to panic? I mean, you can panic. And generally, we panic about things mostly that never happen, right?
Of course.
The worst consequence is never really what happens, but that's what always keeps us up at night. So that's another advantage, I guess, of this awakening thing, when you can see through these things clearly. But even if you can't see through them, you can also get rid of the panic. Not to a 100% extent, but, you know, 95 to 100, usually, the fear of these things are gone. And you can see more the comedy side of it, the absurd side of it, the exploitative side of it, and just chill out. And so that's why, yeah, it's beautiful that we've got into all of these aspects in this one chat, because usually I sort of end up going down the carnivory thing or something like that. But
they're all intrinsically linked.
They are.
And there isn't an holistic approach. It doesn't seem there's an holistic approach to reality. You know, you mentioned Jeremy with the healing. I do a lot of healing stuff. I've got my head in books and on courses and all sorts. And you mentioned carnivory. To me, that is a healing process.
Yeah.
Even a lot of the vegans are going that way for a healing process. They're trying it for a cleansing process. They don't know what for usually, but usually it is that.
Yeah.
So until we all start going, right, let's go back to nature. Let's see the circadian rhythms. Let's learn about that. Let's see what's going on there. Going to carnivory, wow, this completely altered my life. And we don't, a lot of people just do one thing, don't they? They just sit in something and go, that's the key. That's the answer. We've got it. And you need, I think we need to step back from that and go, okay, there's a big rainbow here that we need to be looking at, not just looking at the pot of gold on the end. Let's make the rainbow the gold itself, you know, the journey itself. Because we have visions, we have goals and dreams that are so far in the future and set over there. And they're missing the point. In my opinion, they're just missing the point. So,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, I just like to spend time trying to find out how I'm wrong. I mean, even in the carnivore thing, I love it when somebody comes in and says, okay, I've been carnivore for 6 months and I'm not feeling good. And it's like, excellent. You know, because if this happens to somebody else, how can I figure that out? This isn't a religion. I'm not stuck in, you have to eat beef and water. And if you didn't feel right, then you didn't do it right. This is why I love my friend Elliot Overton, you know.
Yeah.
He has a channel called EO Nutrition, and he did a video that I always share of when carnivory isn't enough. And you can see that some people come into it with certain issues and that can't be resolved by just going carnivore. Nothing is a magic bullet. It is incredibly spectacular, you know, when it works. I think it works quicker and more spectacularly than any other dietary intervention I've ever seen. And I think I've seen them all. But there are sometimes it doesn't work. There are other issues going on. There might be very deep-seated nutritional deficiencies. This thing that Elliot always likes to go on about thiamine and some of the B vitamins and, you know, vitamin C. Like, most carnivores will never have an issue with vitamin C. They certainly won't get scurvy. But some of them Elliot's seeing might have a higher requirement for it. Maybe the pathway's a little bit damaged. I don't know. But he can see subclinical stuff that's going on that suggests vitamin C deficiency. Great. This was probably easily covered by a few berries in the summer.
Yeah.
When we were in the wild, you know, and that's beautiful. So I'm not like, oh, you have to be carnivore. No, it sorts everything out. No, it doesn't. It is often a bit too good to be true. So it sounds like bullshit, particularly since meat and fat's been built up to be so evil. Sometimes you just do that to people, everything sorts itself out. You're like, whoa, what the fuck? People are not going to believe this. It pretty much is like that with me. It's amazing. But for some people, obviously not. And so we're all different. I think we all have an ancestral diet.
Yeah.
It's like when people just say, oh, well, everyone's different. Some people thrive on plants. Some people, it's not really as simple as that. Like we've said, you have to go into season and latitude and, are you eating shit from the supermarket that doesn't exist in nature, or vegetables and fruits that we've bred in some way and crossbred and until they're completely different? So it's not a matter of that. It's a matter of who were you, what were your imbalances, what were your where do you live, what's the season, what's your inflammatory history, you know, it's a beautiful detective work. I love it. It's fantastic when you get somebody to come along and then there's the emotional side. Maybe it's not working because they've got some emotional issue, you know? That's at the root of it. It's absolutely amazing when you see something like that heal somebody up. It's great. Wow.
Phil, let's wrap this up, buddy. We've been on it an hour and 20 minutes, I think. So
have we? Cool.
Where do people, where can they
find you? My kids are starting to get noisy anyway.
Are they?
Yeah, they're racketing away there. Throwing stuff down the stairs, it sounds like. I hope it's not missing.
Time for your Sunday steak.
Yes. Yeah, actually, I haven't eaten today. I'm ready for a meal.
Where can people find you, buddy? And do you want to get sell anything? Or
do you want to sell anything?
Have you got anything to sell?
Yeah. Yeah, I've got a couple of old washing machines that are broken. Got a dryer. I've got a TV. You can find me on my YouTube channel, which is just my name, Phil Escott. There's lots of stuff on there, all sorts of info on carnivory and some of the Human Unleashed free stuff. We've got I've got a website called pureactivity, one word, .net, where I've got a lot of blog posts and this and that, things we sell, sort of crazy carnivore t-shirts and my books and ebooks and my autoimmunity course, which I'm kind of proud of. I think I've covered everything in there. If anybody's got, you know, arthritis or something connected with autoimmunity, that course I've done is a 30 video course, and I have that. And my books on Amazon, Arthritis, the best thing that ever happened to me, a couple of other books as well. There's even a novel on there, actually. I won't go into that. But the thing I'm really proud of at the moment that I'm doing, apart from, well, we've got the 100% Carnivore and Beyond Facebook group and a couple of offshoot ones as well from that, arthritis one and a little bit of a more spiritual one. But I think the thing that I'm really, really proud of at the moment is the Human Unleashed that we've been chatting about, that I've been doing with Dr. Jeremy Ayers and Graham Norbury and Ben Hunt. And it's these guys, they just blow me away all the time. And we have a different perspective on the same subject. If we're going on about a particular subject, we have a different perspective, and it's great. You can sort of triangulate it, you know, and we come out learning stuff from each sort of area that we even thought we might know something quite a bit about. We come out with different ideas and we get on so well, and it's fun, and we mess about, and we're never that serious. So, you know, just British humor and stuff like that. So that's at thehumanunleashed.com. There's a free membership for 30 days, and some of the stuff's free anyway. And it's a shame we've had to cancel our carnivore retreat in May. We were so looking forward to that with Sean Baker coming along, and there's all sorts of other great speakers, but we'll do it later in the year. We'll do it sometime when all this lunacy dies down.
Yeah.
And we'll be out there, and we're planning quite a few more conferences. So keep an eye on that at the Human Unleashed. And Jesus, I waffled on about that for a while. I didn't realize how much we've got out there at the moment, but yeah, it's quite a lot.
That's quite cool. Thanks a lot for your time, buddy. Really appreciate that. Great interview.
Well, mate, thank you so much for having me on. It's been a great chat. You've gone down. You know, so sometimes you do interviews and it's just one layer of this, but you seem to be on all the layers, mate. So well done to you.
Well, thank you.
I'm gonna have to check out more of your stuff.
I've been in property since 2012. You mentioned you had a few properties. I've been in property for, you know, 7 or 8 years now, and it sort of bought me the time to be able to just devour, study.
Yeah.
You know, and you can overstudy as well, can't you? Rather than living.
Yeah. Sometimes you just got to let it sink in. I find it's like drum practice. Like when I'm practicing the drums, you practice like crazy. You seem like you're not getting anywhere. Until oh, I've had enough of that. Then 6 months later, that thing you were practicing comes out at a gig. It's like, whoa, there it was. You know, sometimes these things have to stabilize and settle in.
Yeah, that's it. Phil, absolute pleasure. Thanks a lot for coming on, mate. Cheers.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
See you soon, Alex. Bye.
Bye.